welcome to the Blind Handyman Show, recorded at the Little Ranch House right here on Southwest Drive in Lufkin, Texas. Show number 49. And it's August 26, 2003, for the next hour, ladies and gentlemen. We will be talking about building, repairing, and maintaining, all designed with the blind in mind. The host for the show, Don Shaw.
Howdy, Tom Houston.
How's it going, Don?
Fine, man.
Don Patterson?
Yes, sir. Right.
Say hello.
Here. I'm here.
All right, good. I'm Tom Houston, but here's the host of the Blind Handyman Show, the creator and producer. And we've got to do this right. Ladies and gentlemen, Phil Parr.
Thank you so much, friends and neighbors.
Yes.
Like, yeah, they can't find a company to move the monument. That's what the deal is. Anyway, that's what the deal is. It's kind of like, I'm not going to. No, I'm not.
Shame
anyway,
on you.
I meant to. I'd get you in trouble, wouldn't it? Hello
really
there.
They should have put that monument in Braille, then not too many people would have known what it was, and then the furor would have never started.
That's
well,
true.
You know, Ashcroft made them cover up the Monument of Justice that has the one big breast. You know, but if you cover that up, you still see a big boob up there. That's true. I'm not. That's the truth. Anyway, we're off into. Well, we're getting drifty a little early, aren't we?
Yeah.
I can tell you right now, we're not
right
very well prepared.
We're back on our equipment again. We have everything restored. We have a new board. Board number 4.
Man, it's fine too.
It is. We have board number 4. We have. Our microphone's back. We're using the good mics again.
Yeah.
Don has his, and Shaw has his, and Demi Patterson has his, and Tom always had the same mic. We never moved it. He always had the good one.
I always stay with the good microphone, don't you, Tom?
The way it should be, of course.
Well, it is. I did fail to mention last week, of course, that one of the microphones we had.
Here it comes.
One of the microphones we had used last week was the mic that was used at the now famous original Lufkin Broadcasting School.
Tom Houston.
Was it school or academy?
Broadcasting.
Academy.
Tom Houston started broadcasting school one time. He had three students, right?
This is many years ago. Yeah, three students.
In 75. You'd quit me.
Yeah.
Gone to work for Daryl Yates and gone over to the other radio station. You got mad at me and quit me. Even though we were drinking buddies back then, you got mad at me.
Well, some we guy. Still tipped a few together.
And anyway. And so he just started this broadcasting school. Had three students, did one semester, Lufkin Broadcasting, but got paid for these guys.
All right.
And one of them, believe it or not, is still employed in the radio business.
Has made his living that way
every year since then.
Putting a kid through school.
Very good.
Keith Sims.
And radio, yeah.
Yeah, Keith, he talks like this all the time, but...
Anyway, he's made his living doing radio. So anyway, we just wanted to mention that as a sort of historic fact.
He is dependable.
Thousands of years, 100 years from now, people are going, what the hell are they talking about?
Yeah, really. Yeah. Well, Tom, there's your second career. You know, it's never too late to start the second Tom Houston.
Well,
exactly.
Broadcasting.
Exactly.
Yes, it was.
Exactly.
It was probably too late for the first.
It probably was. But
now, we tried it a second time and couldn't get a class together.
No,
remember?
We're going to try the Internet Broadcasting School.
We tried it a second time and couldn't get a class together. Remember, Houston?
Yeah, we did.
We tried it again, and we couldn't get another class together. We got some takers.
Just not enough people in this area.
Got some lookers, but no
wanted to work in radio.
Not enough radio folks.
At that time,
too many smart people. You know?
At that time, there was Columbia School of Broadcasting in Elkins, and there were several big broadcasting schools.
Oh,
speaking of going on cruises.
Yes. Yes.
We get a lot of good inquiries, a lot of people calling, I got about three calls yesterday, people interested, people talking. When you're ready to pay, call me, we'll give you the travel agent's number, Alicia. She'd be glad to hear from you. She's got all the answers. If I can't answer the question, she can. We're cruising. I know y'all are getting tired of hearing about this, but we still don't have enough. We need more people to go with us. Dave and Pam, I haven't heard from them. I need to call them.
Yeah.
They called me, and I guess they've gotten all the information. I need to get a hold of them and Mike and Hazel and up in Minnesota, those folks I went on that last cruise with. So, anyway, if you want to go, email me at philparr@txucom.net, and I'll email you back all the information. Or just call me at 936-634-9500, and we'll be glad to hear from you. Let's go a-cruising, y'all.
That's right.
Right.
That's it.
All right.
You got it.
Tommy?
Cruising. Okay, yeah. We're ready here.
I'm ready.
Hey, gang, Mary Beth here. I would like, really like to change out our light over the bathroom sink. I would like to put in a fluorescent light. I could use some ideas with this. Thanks. Mary Beth in Sunset.
Well, that's no problem. I mean, that's no big deal, changing a... well, I guess she has... What would she have? She would have a string of lights up there above her sink, or just a single...
Well, they make them in all different flavors, and it would depend on whether she hers is coming down for the ceiling. I would imagine in modern times it's coming out of the wall, if it's probably the vanity light. And they make actually special fluorescent lights for bathrooms, in fact, where the light shines kind of just out of the bottom. It mounts up against the wall flush where the light is pointed down.
Yeah, it'd have a little cover over it where the light would reflect the light downward.
And it's, you know, the main thing is, I mean, we always tell everybody to turn off the power.
That's it. Turn off that power, man.
And I would even go far, you know, try to find your breaker as opposed to turning just the light switch off, because depending on what kind of wiring you have, could still something be hot back there.
Boy, that's the truth.
Because I found that out firsthand.
By experience.
Yeah. Yeah, if I was going to do it, I'd sure turn off the breaker. But, of course, if you're total, just turn the house off.
Yeah, that's what I say.
Yeah,
just
find the main breaker, man.
And let her rip, and then just kind of decide. You know, the big thing is, how big is your old fixture, and is there room for another one, or are you going to try to buy the same size? The fluorescent would come probably in 2-foot bulbs, or I don't think you might have room for a 4-foot. I don't know the layout, but and they make like with 2 bulbs. For myself, I don't know if, you know, I'm partially sighted. Of course, and I like light a lot of light. And really, sometimes you don't necessarily get that from a fluorescent. You get kind of soft light. So I went to the 8-bulb bar, which has 8 bulbs and just makes tons of light. So
above your vanity?
Yeah, above the vanity.
Ours has 6 big old fat bulbs in it, there.
But
yeah.
Basically, depending on that, after you get the old fixture off, you're going to have a little junction box there with the wires, and the most you're going to be dealing with is 3 wires, probably 2. And you're going to probably have to have somebody there. If I don't know the vision situation, but it's going to be white on white and black on black. But try them, and if it doesn't work,
hook it up the other way. It'll work either way. Trust me, folks. They say white on white. Say all they want to. It'll work either way. Yeah, that light will work. Either way you hook it up, you got probably three wires, a drain wire, ground wire, and 2 other wires. Hook it up. I guarantee you it'll work if you've got it wire nutted. Just put some... Use some wire nuts, hook it up, and now attaching it to the wall. If it's in sheetrock, I'd use what we used to call molly bolts. They call them something else now. What are they? Fasteners now.
All kind of fasteners
that you push through the wall, and then you tighten up, and it makes a little thing in the wall. And you unscrew the screw, and you have a little place there to put a screw. I'd sure use those and make sure that it's reasonably level. You can probably with your mirror level it well enough to tell how level it is.
Well, in most light kits, when you're putting them up, after you take it out of the box, it's going to come apart, and you're going to wind up with, like, the back part, which is probably fairly light, and you can actually put it up there and kind of put it where you want to and use it as a template.
And then
at least get one of your holes started and fastened. And you might want to use the plastic anchor bolts anymore. A lot of times, instead of molly bolts or the traditional big toggle bolts, they give these little, you make a fairly small hole, say, you know, the size of a small pencil, something like that. And then you put this plastic insert in there, kind of tap it in with a hammer, and then the screw will screw right into that, and it's solid as a rock.
Yeah, unless you chinned on it, that's going to stay up there.
Uh-huh.
No question. And chances are you're in sheetrock. But just decide how wide your mirror is, and center it above the mirror.
Right.
I agree with him. The back will come off, and so you get one done, and then you kind of level it with your mirror. Maybe it would be 3 inches from the mirror, so you could even make a little something 3 inches long, and just make sure that you got it level and squared up with the mirror. Tack the other side in, tie the wires on. I mean, this should be a 30-minute job. It'll probably take 3 hours if your wife or husband help you.
Yeah, speaking of fluorescents, I have one in my garage to change, 8-foot, and it's rather difficult because I can't see from one end to the other.
This is the stand on the car.
And this is the one we have to use, the 8-foot ladder, and then I have to have someone hold the ladder. So
I would remember that fluorescent bulbs, you push them in, they're little slots on the end. It's easy to find those slots, but once you get them pushed up in there, turn them a quarter of a turn.
Yeah.
and they'll stay. You'll hear them lock in, snap in,
yep,
and lock.
Snap in.
And they'll be, and they're very easy to put in, but you need to turn them when you put them in, because if you don't, they'll fall out.
Right.
Just give them a little turn, and you think about those things. You think everybody knows that. Everybody doesn't know that.
Or let the new owner of the house change the fluorescent bulbs.
Well, might we actually know as dark as it is, we need the light to wash with. The washer is there. I thought, because that thought crossed my mind.
Yeah, I bet it did.
Well, you know, where your washer is now, you could go get a light fixture and put above it where you got it up on that little porch.
That I'm going to let the new homeowner do.
You'll let that. You're going to change it. But, all right, Tommy, go ahead.
We actually got an answer to an email that we had last week. A fellow by the name of Ronaldo down in South Africa. You probably recall we read this email last week. I'm going to refresh your memory on it a little bit.
Right.
Many years ago, a friend gave me a small device with a spring-loaded sharp pin inside the outer casting as a bevel in front that you locate in a screw hole of a hinge, and when you push on the pin or hit it with a light hammer, it would make a mark on a mark or a small pinhole in it.
Uh-huh.
Well, he had lost his, and he was looking for another one. He had the big one, but he was looking for the little one, and we had a couple of responses to email. And here's one of them. It says, "Hi all, you can go to your little hardware store in your village, town, city, etc., and purchase an automatic center punch. Now, I have one and use it daily for center punching an item before drilling. This is a common tool.
Uh-huh.
Firemen often carry this tool in their pocket and use it for vehicle entry at an accident site.
Wow.
Now, if you put this in the corner of the windshield and snap it, and the windshield shatters, giving them entry into the vehicle to rescue and assist occupants in need. A good tool supply company, other than a chain store, should be able to help you if you have one in your area. Now, these punches have a tension adjustment spring on them so that the force of the punch can be adjusted to make a heavier mark,
which is
easier to feel for a totally blind person. Okay, now, if you have the need for any more assistance on this tool, you can contact this guy, and we have his number here and his email address and all that stuff.
And it's called a center punch.
That's what he called it, an
automatic center punch.
Well, I guess I'll have to go get one.
That'd be a handy tool to have, man.
You have one.
I have one. It is a handy tool to have.
I didn't know they'd break a windshield.
I was going to say, I'd like to see that in action. I was thinking about my neighbor. I don't like him much anyway.
The experiment, boy, we could try.
I could walk over there
sometime. The old experiment.
Well, I guess we could draw and see whose car we tried it on. I bet we couldn't get permission.
Luann's little black car sitting out there might be a good candidate, huh?
My goodness, that sounds
I bet she wouldn't be a happy
camper. You know, that sounds very powerful for a thing that you carry in your pocket. I sure wouldn't want it to go off. You could get in trouble.
Might ruin the family forever.
Yeah, that wouldn't be swift.
Anyway, I didn't mention the guy's name, but his name is Walter Gramza.
We know Walter Gramza. He's got a polka band in New York, right?
He does play the accordion.
Did you know that?
Walter.
He plays the accordion. He used to play jazz band stuff. We have him coming up on a Blind Like Me show in the near future.
Maybe
week after next. We'll do. I edited it yesterday. It was a little long.
Good.
A couple of minutes. He's had an interesting life. A piano tuner.
I'll tell you what. He knows his automatic hole punches.
I tell you what. He has a Cordovox, Pat.
Oh wow!
Which is what you had, right?
An old Cordovox. Yeah.
The old tired old Cordovox.
Yeah.
Anyway.
What a deal, man.
And then another response to that. This is, I'm stretching my memory a bit here, but I think those things are called Jiffy self-center punches.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple of them, and we'll ask someone to look the next time I have some eyes around. I think they were in the U.S. General Tool catalog years ago. I also think I've seen them at Northern Tool on the web. Good luck. It seems every time I want to replace a tool, it's been replaced by a much bigger, more complicated, more expensive device, and that from a gentleman by the name of Joe. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Joe. Yeah,
way to go, Joe.
Set up two glasses, Joe. I'm sorry. Carried away there. Are we? What else we got? Anything else?
I believe that's going to get it.
Not going to get it? Are we ready for our guesto? Guest, I guess we are. Who is our guest today? Donald Shaw is a guest man.
Our guest today is Ron Yearns from Warrensburg, Missouri.
Warrensburg, Missouri, where it gets, by God, hot.
And probably, by God, cold in the winter,
It does. Anyway, we'll talk about that. We'll have our guest on just a bit more of the Blind Handyman Show. Hang on.
Thank you. The Blind Handyman. Blind Handyman, all lowercase, one word, at hotmail.com. That's Blind Handyman at hotmail.com.
Contact information.
Blind Like Me. Blind Like Me, lowercase, all one word, at txucom.net. That's Blind Like Me at txucom.net.
Contact information.
Blind Handyman listserv. Blind Handyman dash subscribe at yahoogroups.com. That's Blind Handyman dash subscribe at yahoogroups.com.
Contact information.
Blind Handyman at hotmail.com. Blind Like Me at txucom.net. Blind Handyman dash subscribe at yahoogroups.com. Email us often and give us your opinion. If you'd like to be a guest on one of our shows, give us your
contact information.
Do you remember?
Simmons and Andy!
Harry Craig, confidential investigator.
Old Venture!
Box 13.
Captain Midnight!
The Cavalcade of America.
Kondo, the magician.
The incomparable Charlie Chan.
The Cisco Kid.
Dangerous assignment.
Dimension X.
Dragnet.
If you love old-time radio, point your browser to
www.otrcat.com.
You'll find thousands of old-time radio shows just waiting for you, and the price is right.
That's www.otrcat.com.
From Amos and Andy to X-1, this is The Source.
www.otrcat.com.
You are listening to The Blind Handyman on the ACB Radio Mainstream, the talk of the blind community. Our email address is blindhandyman@hotmail.com. If you would like to be part of the show, leave us a phone number and we will contact you soon.
Frankie.
Oh. Now, here's more of today's show with Phil Parr.
I didn't realize that you'd already turned the mics on. Poor Frankie Brand. She just loves us and wants to be in here with us. That's my big dog. She's a kind of a lab, but we got her from the pound. She weighs about 80 pounds. And she'd really like to be in here visiting with us. And
she really would.
That's what she's complaining about.
Frankie, hi.
All right. Now, onward and upward, it's time for our guest. Ron, how do you pronounce your last name, sir?
That's Ron Yearns.
Yearns.
Uh-huh.
And your city is?
Warrensburg.
Warrensburg, Missouri.
That's right.
Now, give me some idea of where that is, so say from St. Louis.
Well, it's 55 miles southeast of Kansas City.
Okay, I pretty well, fairly well got you.
Yeah.
And what age are you, sir?
I'm 55.
So you're coming up, you're about up with us. We're all at high 50s, low 60s. And how long have you been without sight?
Oh, well, since it was progressive, I knew when I was a teenager, you know, that it was coming on in my early 20s, 30s.
Really?
You know, the night blindness came about.
So you've known for a long time that someday you possibly would be completely without sight?
That's the prognosis, yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess you had a good bit.
All right. Dropped out.
Okay, that was me.
Tom keeps turning my mic down, Ron.
I was playing here with the mic.
What would you think of that?
I was thinking it was my mic.
Some indication of his love for me, I suppose.
So this must be mine.
Quit that.
Hey.
So you had a long time to get used to the idea of...
Yeah,
well...
Did you drive until what time?
Oh, till about 94, I think it was.
Would have made you, what, 40, in your 40s, early 40s?
Late 40s, somewhere in there.
What did you... Did you get a college education, or just probably went to work right out of school, didn't you?
No, I got a bachelor's in industrial education.
Yeah, why not, right?
About a couple of years, and then... Came to Warrensburg and got a master's in vocational education and was working on a specialist degree until it came to writing that thesis. And I just said, I ain't got nothing to write about.
Well, now you should have gone the no thesis route.
Well, they didn't have that option with that degree.
Okay, yeah. I took the easy way out on my history degree. I just did the extra hours.
Yeah, well, that's what I did with my master's for sure.
But you got a bachelor's degree in what now?
Industrial education.
Industrial education.
Yeah.
So you wanted to be a teacher.
I was a shop teacher for a couple of years.
Yeah. You say for a couple of years?
Yeah, two and a half.
Two and a half. And gradually your eyesight deteriorated.
Uh-huh.
And what do you do something now? Are you employed for yourself, or what do you do now?
Well, I'm self-employed, what I call R&S Enterprises, which a lot of people probably see that on my emails.
Uh-huh.
And I initially tried to start a telephone answering service, you know, specifically targeted to contractors.
Okay.
And that didn't really go well in the days, you know, with pagers and cell phones.
Yeah.
So I went ahead with the furniture repair and upholstery business.
I see you. You're on our handyman list, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
I see you all the time. That's right. I didn't realize who that was. And so what do you reupholster furniture or refinish or what?
I have done some refinishing. I kind of shy away with that. I need too much outside help for that, but I reupholster.
Reupholstering furniture would be an interesting thing.
So did you go through some type of training or just teach yourself or something you'd learned over the years?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. One time my son and I was working on a car, and he said, "Dad, how did you learn so much about cars?" And I said, "Well, you know all them books in there behind the desk? Go through all them in about 30 years and you'll learn something."
Uh-huh.
That's true.
So, you know, other than the industrial arts, some training there. My dad was a carpenter and handyman type person, I guess. And I read some books and I just did some for myself, you know, to start with and branched out.
Yeah.
I cannot imagine. I mean, I can imagine building something for me and all that, but I cannot imagine upholstering a chair. I wouldn't even know where to start.
Well, if it's already been done, you just take it apart and put it back.
Well, that makes sense to me.
And you look at what the guy before you did, and you do it the same way, I suppose.
Yeah, right? Pretty well.
Well, there's a little more to it than that, but so you got to learn how to take the material that comes in a square piece and put it around where it has little pockets in it or little, what do you call those things? I notice around a chair you have little places where they obviously folded the material over.
No, you're probably talking about some pleats there.
Pleats. Yeah. Good word. I'm glad.
Well, do you do your sewing? Like if you have a, you know, design where the cushion or something has a hem or something around
it. Yeah, I'm still
edge.
Able to do some of that.
Yeah. Yeah. My goodness, you must have gotten into it big time. Huh?
So you have like a big machine that you do that work on?
Yeah, and I use it some. Honestly, I use a small antique, almost Singer sewing machine household one to do most of it. It runs a lot slower.
Yeah, it runs a lot slower and a lot less chance of a blind guy running a needle through his
finger. Yeah, that fast one is just big time moving.
Yeah. My mother, when I was a kid, ran a needle through her finger, and I've never heard my mother scream. She was just, it must have hurt really bad. But you do tack upholstery on also with a tack hammer.
Well, with a hammer.
A hammer, yeah.
Best thing I ever bought was my air-powered stapler.
Oh, yeah? Is that what you use that?
Yeah.
It would be the thing to have, wouldn't it?
It would be.
I hate those electric ones. You have to pound them in half the time anyway.
You do, with an electric stapler? Most times.
Yeah, hardwoods.
Even sometimes with softwood, if you're using long staples, you got to put up some acoustic tile with them. And I noticed every time I'd go along and, golly, these are not, you know. So you've got the compressor and the electric.
Yeah.
Stapler, unless you have to use fancy tacks.
Then you're stuck with a hammer.
Well, Ron, are you into the material sales part of it, or do you let your customers pick their material and bring it to you?
I'll do it both ways.
My goodness. Now, that would be quite an operation, finding a place to get the material.
I guess I have about three companies that I deal with.
Right.
And so you'd have a book there for them to look through.
Right, and swatches and stuff.
And they could look through. Are you a one-man guy?
I do have one lady that will come in occasionally and help me sew cushions.
Uh-huh.
But it's more or less on a partnership basis type of thing.
How about things like if the chair or sofa or something would need new springs now? Do you do springs or?
Oh, yeah.
Things like that.
I'm probably actually enjoying repairing it more than I do upholstering it.
Is that right?
Well, just for grins, because as blind people ourselves, we've all been around, so I'd have to ask you, do you cane? Do you any cane chair?
No,
chair
I don't.
Okay.
No chair caning.
If you need a guy, I can do one or two in an afternoon.
Two or three a day, huh?
I'm going to say, I've read through the instructions of that one, Don. This ain't not for me.
Oh, man, we had some chair caners on the list.
We all took, I think all three of us that are blind, took chair caning. I took it, and Don Shaw took it, and Patterson took it.
I did.
Yep.
And Don is the only one. Don Shaw is the only one who retained the ability to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Last one I tried, it was miserable. He had to take it all apart and do it over.
I have redone some backs, you know, with what they call machine caning.
Which is sheep cane. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you how well my education in that field turned out. I had a chair that needed re-caning, and I paid Don Shaw to do it.
Now, what about leather, a leather-type chair? Do you guess you would do those also?
Well, I suppose I could. The cost of the leather, and you have to buy it in such large quantities, nobody wants to pay what I have to pay for it and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this, Ron. With your vision situation and deteriorating all the time, is this something, how much of the work can a blind, like totally blind person, how much of it could they do? 90%? Or would they have to have some eyes at some time?
Well, the one thing, when you get your material, you need someone to say, this is the good side and this is the way the pattern runs.
Right.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. Okay.
That's when I pull out my roll of electric tape.
Okay.
And I, put an arrow on there.
Right.
And every time as I'm fixing to cut a piece out, then I put that same orientation arrow on it.
Uh-huh.
And, you can feel the electric tape, or you can use masking tape or what have you, I guess.
Sure. Right. So you know that this is right side up.
Right. This is right side up, and this is the top way, in terms of orientation.
Yeah, well, I hadn't thought about that. So you would have to have some eyes to do that.
Yeah.
So maybe you'd have a wife to do that, or a girlfriend or something to do.
Well, the wife's around. I still have a daughter at home.
Well, I was going to say maybe you have a wife and a girlfriend.
I wouldn't want to answer that.
Let's don't get into that. So you have a wife and you still have a daughter at home, so you depend on their eyes.
Plenty of help.
Yeah, come around, we need to borrow your eyes, and they come in, spend 2 or 3 minutes, and, it's done.
See, being a total all my life, I didn't know there was a pattern. It never dawned on me that there. I'd have put it on upside down.
Oh, yeah. Some of them are really small to see,
Yeah,
I bet.
You still have a little vision?
Yeah. A little bit, yeah. I don't know. I think it's like 2,400 or somewhere.
Yeah. Well,
so, like, if you were going to cut the, let's just say you were doing a cushion then, and you were going to cut, like, the top or the top and sides, and you would cut the piece of material actually bigger than what you would need.
You've got to have a little allowance for the seam, yes.
Yeah, that's
usually you tear the old piece apart and pin it to the new fabric, so you've got a pattern to work from.
Okay,
and use that with the old piece as a pattern.
Ron,
and a cutting guide.
Are there certain types of furniture, or you've already talked about leather and it prohibitive, but that you might steer away from, like little old ladies bringing a little antique? A little finicky lady. Have you ever encountered one of them?
One job I turned down, they brought I guess you'd call it a cane woven bassinet, wanted me to repair it.
Uh-huh.
And I said, there's just no way you can do that.
Yeah, there'd be no point in even trying that.
Well, I suppose it could be done, but you're going to have to tear it down and start from scratch.
Uh-huh. How do you keep a hand in the phone book there in your town, or you just usually word of mouth?
I have an ad in the Yellow Pages.
And you get to any store business? You have any stores there?
Actually, there was one furniture store that is, they rent furniture and stuff, and bring quite a bit of repair around.
Uh-huh. I bet when you if you get a piece of furniture, a sofa or whatever that's really 20-year-old, 30-year-old sofa in there or something, it's probably like rush chair caning. I bet you when you tear off some of the old upholstery off of a piece of furniture like that, man, I bet that's a really dirty job, isn't it? When
taking
the old off.
Have you accumulated a fortune in change that you found inside the furniture?
Yeah, all those nickels and quarters and things.
Nope, not much that way.
Well, is your shop at your home, or do you have a special a place of business someplace?
It's at my house, yes.
Okay.
What a deal, man.
And so you're one of these self-motivated individuals that works from his house, and you never take naps after lunch, do you? That's the problem with working at home. The problem is eating lunch. If we could get away from lunch, I'd get a lot done. But every time after lunch, I think, well, I could do that at 3 as well as I can at 1. You know.
Yeah, there's an awful lot of things that interferes when you're at home, that's for sure.
There are. Drinking not being the least of them. But anyway. But naps after lunch. Houston and I, we've worked from home for a long time doing different little things, and I work from home now. I have a recording studio, and I do stuff from home. And it's easy to get up. It's easier for me to get up in the morning at 4:30 or 5 and hit it and do it till noon. But about noon, it's time. I've had all I can handle of whatever I'm doing. You know, I guess that's the typical work at home people, huh?
Well, that's the joy of it. You can pick your hours. You know, if I get up at 9 and don't start until 10 or 10:30, well, then if I want to work until midnight, I can do that, too.
Nobody really cares as long as you get the job done and collect the money from the customer. That's all that matters. Right?
Ron, do you have a driver? Are you in on the delivery and pickup end of it, or is it just a cash and carry basis for the customer?
I don't make house calls.
Okay.
They bring
their piece of furniture to you, and you have a big bay door where they can get a couch in and get all kinds of things in your place, and you
ahead garage door, yeah.
And you assess it and tell them what it's going to cost, and if they want to do it, fine. They leave it. If they don't, they take it away.
Yeah.
I got a question.
Usually, I can give them a fair estimate, you know, or the telephone even.
Uh huh. I got a question for you. Some of these springs and that you put maybe in sofas or some of these chairs and things. But some of these springs, man, I bet you really have to compress or tie down or something until you get the material over the spring or something, wouldn't you? Some kind of way to keep them.
Yeah, your springs are, you know, fastened down with nails or screws or some kind of clips before you get into any fabric or padding.
Yeah, I wondered how you'd keep the spring down until you got the covering, whatever it would be, over the spring between, like, the springs and the cushion.
You'd have to fasten the spring down first.
They're usually kind of a long leaf-like spring, though, weren't they? I mean, they're long spring steel thing that you fasten at each end, and it goes up and, you know.
Well, that might be a strap spring. There's zigzag springs, which...
Yeah.
Do you buy that? I was going to ask you about those because I happen to have a chair that has a broken one in it. Do you buy that for in bulk somewhere and cut your own lengths? Or
the zigzags comes in a coil, yeah.
Okay, but how about the other kind of, the leaf spring, or what are you saying now?
Well, there's coil springs.
Yeah.
You know, you can buy those individually, buy different sizes and diameters and heights.
And then the other ones are called what? That go across, like, from front to back on a couch or a chair, like I have.
Well, most I ran into are actually a zigzag spring.
Yeah, okay, zigzags. And that comes in set links, you said?
No, that comes in a coil.
In a coil, okay.
Mm-hmm. And so you just cut a piece off.
That's kind of
neat. Zigzag, you mean it goes one side and then makes a loop and goes back to the other side.
Half a circle.
Yeah, about like 1 inch and a half, 2 inches wide.
Yeah.
I go through a recliner about every 3 years. I'm on my fourth one. We've lived in this house 12 years. So, you know, I find that they finally get to where they just almost, the springs are out and there's just nothing left of them. So I just trash them out. I guess if I had a guy like you, you could fix them for me, couldn't you?
Well, it could be done, but many people will call and ask and they say, you know, any of the repairing or the reupholstery. And they say, well, golly, I could almost buy a new couch for that.
That's
going to be my question.
You're quite honest, I said, if you just need a couch, go to a garage sale or something.
Yeah, go buy yourself a couch.
Unless you're in love with this piece of furniture, it's, you know, grandma's or an antique or something.
Which I guess you get a lot of, grandma's.
A fair amount,
antiques.
Or a very expensive recliner or something like that, a very expensive piece of furniture like the Duncan Fife line or something like that.
Yeah, sure.
You know, it would be cost effective maybe to upholster there where it wouldn't be if it was a cheaper piece of furniture.
Uh-huh. Or there are people, you know, that buy their own fabric and get something like it in an outlet place, you know, $5 or $6, like $2 or $3 a yard.
Well, I was going to mention, like my wife now did some interior decorating, and so then all of a sudden her couch and chairs didn't match, but she liked them. She didn't want to buy new, so she found the material that matched what she had done and then got an upholsterer to change their look, and so it's. Sure we're moving in a new house, so I'm sure we're going to do that again.
Going to be doing that again, I bet you.
What would you do? Would you just go? You wouldn't tear the old off. You just go over the old.
No, they tore the old off. I guess. Really? Is that the way you do it, Ron?
Yeah, that's the best way to do it.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, and the ones she had redone looked good to me. I mean, you know.
So you got all the work you want, all pretty much.
Well, the first 2 years I had like a, I don't know what you call it, inch, but 3-inch big ad in the Yellow Pages. It cost an arm and a leg, you know. And
yeah.
So I got tired of working for the Yellow Page people, and I reduced my ad. And they said, oh, you'll lose business. And I said, that'll be fine. You know, telling somebody you got a 6 to 8 week waiting period does not do much for business.
No,
Let's cut it down a little bit.
So you actually had to kind of cut back or actually wanted to cut back.
Either that or hire somebody to do it.
No, you don't want to do that.
Well, in a fair estimate, like if I had a 7 or 6 foot couch, 7 foot couch, wanted to upholster, and you didn't have anything ahead of me, and we had the material, how many hours would you say goes into a 3-cushion couch just for the heck of it?
In actual man hours?
Yeah.
Let's see. Let me translate that kind of back to total cost and figure what I'm doing there.
Yeah.
Okay. All these figures.
Probably looking at about 25-30 hours in all actuality.
Is that 30 hours in the couch?
So a couch, then you'd have to figure in your enough money where it would pay you like almost a 40-hour work week or so. I mean, would make it worth your while, right? Would that
be just cheap to go buy a new couch?
I work pretty cheap, but still.
Yeah.
You know, that's why it's more or less done on a per item basis,
right.
You know, like a couch, you're talking in a neighborhood of $500 labor.
Okay.
But if they buy the material from you, you make a little on the material too, right?
Right. See, if they bring their own material, then I charge for the incidental supplies, you know, tax and
right.
Tax,
sure.
And things like
but
that.
But if $500 a couch, you could just about buy a new couch.
That's right.
You're right.
And that doesn't count the material.
Well, what's the temperature in your town right now? What you got about 90 degrees?
Oh, it's around 100 right now.
Is that right?
Whoa. Goodness gracious.
Yeah, I've never been in Missouri in the summer, but they say it gets awfully hot up there.
Born and raised in Missouri, Ron?
Excuse me?
Are you born and raised in Missouri?
Yeah, up in northeast Missouri.
Okay.
Well, it seems like you're doing fine. You don't need our help, do you?
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
If you did, we'd run up there.
I've learned quite a few things on the website already.
All right. Very good.
And so have I. This will be on Friday night, and you've been a fine guest, sir, and we appreciate you visiting with us on our little Handyman show.
Sure enough, anytime.
Hey Ron, glad to meet you.
Good to talk to you, Ron.
Sure, good talking to you.
Take care, sir, and we'll talk to you in a little bit more of the Blind Handyman show in just a minute.
Handyman, all lowercase, one word, at hotmail.com. That's blindhandyman@hotmail.com.
Contact information.
Blind like me. Blind like me. Lowercase, all one word, at txucom.net. That's blind like me at txucom.net.
Contact information.
Blind handyman listserv. blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
Contact information.
blindhandyman@hotmail.com. Blind like me at txucom.net. blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. Email us often and give us your opinion. If you'd like to be a guest on one of our shows, give us your
contact information.
Do you remember
2000
Simmons and Andy?
Harry Craig, confidential investigator.
Old Venture.
Box 13.
Captain Midnight.
The Cavalcade of America.
Kondo. The Magician.
The Incomparable Charlie Chan.
The Cisco Kid.
Dangerous Assignment.
Dimension X.
Dragnet.
If you love old-time radio, point your browser to
www.otrcat.com.
You'll find thousands of old-time radio shows just waiting for you, and the price is right.
That's www.otrcat.com.
From Amos and Andy to X-1, this is The Source.
www.otrcat.com.
Thanks for listening to The Blind Handyman on ACB Radio Mainstream. If you have an idea for a topic or project you would like us to discuss, let us know at our address, blindhandyman@hotmail.com. Now, back to the show with Don Patterson.
Okay, great to be back here. You know, for the regular listeners, we've been talking about my ongoing house selling and the fact that the warden and I are going to build a house, and we bought our little 3.5, 4 acres. It is what we bought, but it turns out there's about 7/10 of an acre in a right of way or something. So I actually own part of 1194. I'm convinced of it. But anyway, yeah. We went out there. The big day came, and the bulldozer guy came to clear off our little place for our home site. And we sort of picked out. I told him to clear out about 150-foot square, 150 by 150.
Yeah.
And so that he started in the morning, did it in a day. Wasn't a lot of. We saved the tree line around the perimeters. We didn't want. We had to go in about 40 or 50 feet before he started his excavation. And so we went out the afternoon to check on him. And came out, and it looked nice, and we were all pleased with it. And he was still on his bulldozer, so we wanted to walk around. And I had asked him to cut a little trail with the bulldozer back to the two back corners, which were a real grown-up, highly with little shrubs and trees and bushes. You couldn't walk through there is what I'm trying to say.
It makes sense to do
and
that.
And so we had him cut us a little trail, and so I was looking at these little trails, and we were going to walk off. He said, well, it's okay to go that way, but I wouldn't go that way if I were you. And I said, well, what happened? He said, man, I got in a swarm of yellow jackets.
No.
And he said, I guess thousands of them. Oddly enough, they did not sting him. He said they just kind of swarmed him. Now,
Man.
And so I'm very allergic and very susceptible to bee stings. And, of course,
not
I don't know
good.
Anything about yellow jackets. And if you don't or do know, they live in the ground. They build their hives or nests or whatever you call it in the ground. And so.
And when the old bulldozer came along
and brushed it, and he had a big fire going, and he said, so they just came out. Now, why they didn't sting him, I have no idea. I figured I would be dead. But
no kidding.
But anyway, he said, well, y'all might want to take care of that. And of course, we do. And short of getting an exterminator or a person that does this sort of thing, we've bought two of these aerosol things, bee and wasp killer, and of course it says yellow jackets too. And they say that the best time to go is when they're not swarming, and that's early in the mornings or late in the evenings. And I think that if you go out and you just kind of listen for them, you can kind of hear this hum where their nest is, and so then that's how we're going to attack them. I'm not sure. I've never done it before, so I'm not exactly sure what precautions to take.
It really ought to be an experience. But, man,
this would not be a blind-friendly thing to do.
No, definitely not blind-friendly.
I think it wouldn't.
You totals are out there listening. Disregard the last 5 minutes of the show.
Don't. Yeah, that would definitely not be it. Don't try this at home.
You know, they're a brave guy. When I was 25 years old, I might have done it. Because these wasp and hornet things that you got will shoot about 20 feet.
About 25 feet.
I mean, hammer down.
A mighty spray.
And also, you know, except that it is so flammable and dangerous, but gasoline kills on contact. I mean, you have to burn them with the gas. If you just squirt a bee with gasoline, I mean, it takes it out. And the main thing, if you can catch them swarming, I mean, or in their little hive there, of course, then after they got on you, it wouldn't make much difference whether you could see them.
No, it would.
No, it wouldn't make any difference whether you're blind or not.
That's right. But I'm still amazed that the bulldozer guy didn't get stung.
Yeah.
He said they kind of swarmed on him and then went on around because yellow jackets are just notoriously bad guys, I think.
Well, the yellow jackets, the thing about a yellow jacket is once they sting you, they die. The problem with that is they don't know that.
Yeah, that's the big problem right there.
If enough of them sting you, you die.
You die. If they knew that, they wouldn't sting you. But they aren't aware that the fact that they're giving up their life to inflict pain on you.
So needless to say that the ongoings and construction and all that has come to a screeching halt out at Bear Claw
because
the Yellow Jackets own the land. So
Saturday morning you're going out there.
Saturday morning we're going out.
You've got enough sight to...
Well, Emmy's going. I won't go behind her. The warden's going to go first.
You don't want to get anybody to do this. You think you're going to handle this yourself?
Well, we're going to go see if we can hear them, like they say, at that early in the morning. And if not, I may call our exterminator guy.
I think I might.
You know, and see if he would do that.
Because I know that in my building here, you have to have, before they'll pour your slab, you have to have the ground exterminated anyway.
Right. Yeah. We're going to do the termite thing.
Now, that may be a city code thing.
No, it's out there, too. We're going to do the termite
thing. But I bet Sam would go out there and kill those yellow jackets for you.
Yeah.
Well,
it's not Sam now. It's his brother. You know, Sam's in the hospital.
Well, last time I called Sam's phone number, it was
he had a severe stroke.
I didn't realize
6 months ago, yeah.
I think he was actually moving furniture and he had that stroke.
I talked to his mom. I talked to him. No, I'm not accepting.
All right, get out of town.
But, you know, those could have just as easily been killer bees as yellow jackets.
Well, and in my case, you know, I take my allergy shots once a week anyway. I mean, a yellow jacket, it may not have stung that bulldozer guy. He might have been tough from East Texas. Maybe he didn't have any fear.
No, he
ain't
that tough.
But I'll guarantee you one thing, they'd have stung me.
Well, mm-hmm. I had a pole, an antenna that I tacked on the end of the house. I think I may have had a CB antenna and an FM antenna, and the direction of it didn't suit me one afternoon. And I was home doing a little midday imbibing and took the little ladder out there and climbed up there, and I got into something, brother. I mean, they stung me. That was at the Norris Street house.
Really?
You bet. Had a pole on the end of the playroom there.
Man.
And they got me bad. I got up in and got into them. But wait, Alton Carrier, that lived next door where Marilyn lives, worked for some kind of chemical company, kind of stuttered a bit. You want something that'll kill those?
The question is, did he stutter because he worked at the chemical company?
I don't know the question. He got something and walked over and hammered. We never had another one.
But did you tell him he was a little late?
These were wasps, and you could hear them in there. You could hear a noise in the house, and when he stuck this thing down in the crack and sprayed, you never heard another one.
Well, I think we're going to go see what's going on Saturday morning.
Well, that'll be good. You can give us a report on how many times you got stung. Will you?
Yeah. Wasps,
we kind of touched on this a while ago. We haven't talked. I know we did this on the first show, but it'll bear doing again. So somebody might want to do this. In fact, we had that email about this lady who wanted to replace her fluorescent light. Those kinds of things are pretty much blind-friendly to do. If you have a light switch that's bad, if you have a plug that no longer holds the plug, maybe you got an old plug that you put a plug in and it kind of falls out or something, doesn't hold it tight, or you got a light switch that you have to flip two or three times, you can spray some tuner, some cleaner up in there and maybe clean it, and it might work and it might not, but they're cheap and easy to replace. A light switch is a simple, very simple thing to replace. You want to, of course, turn the power off first, figure out if you don't have any eyes around, the thing to have, they make a deal that screws in a light bulb thing that has a plug on it that you can screw in. It'll screw in your light bulb, and then you have a regular AC 110 socket. I used to have one a long time ago. You screw that up in and then plug something in and see if it works to figure out which breaker you're dealing with. But turn the breaker off. Take the two screws. There's a little plate over this switch or plug. Take the two screws out at the top and bottom of the plate. And first of all, find something to put screws in. Because if you don't, you'll lose the screws. You'll put them in your pocket or someplace. Find
that
something
can happen.
Don't lay them on the table because you'll knock them off and you'll never find them. And take those two screws out, and then that plate will just come off. You may have to take a butter knife or a screwdriver or something, put behind it, and pop it off. It's been painted around on sheetrock. Pop it off, and there you got the switch. It has a screw in kind of the same place at the top and at the bottom. And you take applies to a plug also. Take those two screws out, and then your plug is free. Pull it forward on the wires. It'll be on those stretchy wires. There'll be some wires curled up in your little box there. Just pull it out. and you'll see it'll be very obvious where everything goes. One wire goes to the top, one right, one wire goes to the top left, and then there's a ground wire. And either way you wire it, it'll work.
R, instead of the wires being around screws, they could be plugged in directly to the switch.
They could plug.
I've seen them like that, too.
It could be slipped down in a little hole and then the screw tightened up.
Same difference.
But it's the same thing. There would be two screws there, and if the wire isn't wrapped around the screw, it'll be stuck down in a little hole, and then the screw will be tightened up. When you loosen the screw, the wire will come out.
Yep.
And you'll have two wires and a ground wire there. Unless it's going to another plug, then you may have two sets of wires. But just look at what you did before you undo it. Before you start taking stuff apart, like the upholstery guy, look at what
Study
you got
it.
And figure out. And it's very easy to do, and they're very cheap.
Yeah, and recently I got into something that's a little more complicated. I did not, in going on that, just the two wires, putting the wires back where you think they go will work. And Shaw, there's a name. There's TCB plugs or TCG or something, the kind that have the breakers that go in bathrooms and kitchens. The CGF or something. They have initials. Anyway,
GFI.
Okay.
GFI.
Well, let me tell you something. When we sold the warden's house,
fault interference.
When we sold the warden's house, the guy insisted that we replace these plugs, that they did not have the GFI plugs. So I agreed to do it.
Yeah.
Well, I did three plugs. One out of the three worked. I just got lucky. But I tried color coding. Actually, on these things, you take it apart, and it has two sets of screws at the top, two sets of screws at the bottom. One says line, and one says load.
Really?
But even that doesn't mean I called an electrician, and he said, well, even with a voltmeter, it's tough. He had to come and straighten me out. So it is not necessarily a... feel your way along and go what you... I went with what I thought was right, and they didn't work.
So which set of screws then is right?
Well,
that would be the question.
I guess you have to know where the power... In other words, one is to go... You know, a lot of plugs are in line with something else, like they're coming off of a light fixture or before the switch, or they're ahead of the light fixture. And so one is to make that plug work, and the next set of screws is to go to the next thing that you're operating.
Okay.
But see, I just went with white, black on black on the same sides.
Yeah.
And to fix it, actually all he did was go reverse one wire that I had out of whack.
Yeah.
But it was finding the one wire. Of the four. In other words, really it's two wires. You know, you have to, the one you're moving, you're obviously taking another one out of its place and putting it. So
right.
I just had, he had to use his little meters and get me straightened out. I guess a guy could have done it by the take it apart, but they were so hard to stuff up in the wall because they do fill up a box. You know, they fill up your little junction box.
Uh-huh.
I was glad to pay the $65.
Yeah, no kidding.
But in that same way, you're going to be with them wasps. Yeah.
Maybe I'll have a stroke.
But if you're blind and there's nobody there, hook it up one way. If it doesn't work, hook it up another way. Just remember what you did.
Right.
That's the key. Keep your mind on what you did. Don't forget what you're doing and remember how you hooked it up. And, I wire all kinds of things without any instructions or code or any idea of what I'm doing. But if it doesn't work one way, it's going to work another way. And you just keep, that's not the best way to do things. But if you're totally blind, you got to figure out alternative ways to make things work. And you GFIs will work. I guess one the line would be the electric line coming in. And the load would be the plug going out.
That would make sense
and
to me.
You'd want it to break.
And you'd have to find out which sets of wires. See, you go open the box and you don't know from where. If you've got four wires, two whites and two blacks, and two grounds, you don't know where they're coming. You don't know which one is the line or the load.
Well, that's easy enough to figure out.
Yeah.
That's easy enough to figure out. Tie something on a set of wires and go turn the breaker on. If it runs, you're on the line.
Well, yeah, I didn't. That makes sense.
You're on the line then. Obviously, you're on the line. And if you got some sighted person there that can tell you line or load, then you would know which one to put.
Because out of the two out of three, I got one right, but it didn't.
Well, you'd think that you would.
Nothing like having a volt ohm meter.
There's nothing like having. And I understand Dale was telling me yesterday that they've got that he has a one on his. On his, what is that site he had? Blind Mice Mart.
Yeah.
He'll be so happy
he actually got a commercial worked in here?
Well, about every 30 seconds during the cooking show last week, he was going, now you can find that at Blind Mice Mart. These
That's
potatoes,
right.
I bought them at Blind Mice Mart. No, it's just, only kidding, Dale. Anyway, Blind Mice Mart has a talking voltometer. I think it's too expensive, but they do have one. If you just got to have one, I think he said they were about $300.
Goodness,
whoa!
And the Radio Shack one, back when they had it was $69.95.
See, so you could call the the electrician at $65.
Well, you
an
could
hour,
call,
put down your tube.
Yeah, a lot of electricians, boy.
Pat, I would have done that for $50 for you.
Man,
I'd have figured out which was the line and which was the load. It's easy to figure out. Just tie something on the end of that line. If it runs when you kick the breaker on.
I did the plugs, and then the people moved in. And then he called me and said, you know those plugs you said? Well, instead of going over there and trying to redo them.
Sure.
We're
That's
through,
what you'd have
you,
to
huh?
do, man.
Yeah.
Have to hire somebody. I thought I heard the theme, Tom. Did I, Houston?
Yes, you did.
A little touch of the theme. Well, we've knocked out number 49. Next week will be 50 if we all are still
alive.
The
big 50.
Big 50. Well, thanks, Don Patterson.
Yes, sir. Enjoyed it.
For your help, Donald Shaw.
Yeah.
You've contributed a lot. Tom Houston's operated the board and smiled and read the email.
That new board, man. Again, the new board, Tom.
Number four.
Nice.
We appreciate you coming and being with us. Blind Like Me will follow this show. On it, we have Jim Baker, the guy, the president of the U.S. Golfers Association, Blind Golfers Association, and Carol Edwards also will be on Blind Like Me. That'll be coming up in just a minute over most of this ACB radio station. If you're listening on ACB, if you're not, well, I have no idea what's coming up next. Anyway, thanks for being with us. We'll see you next week on the Blind Handyman Show. This is Phil Parr. Remember to, I see, said the blind man as he picked up his hammer and saw.
Blind Handyman is produced for ACB Radio by Out of Market Productions, 1604 Southwood Drive, Lufkin, Texas. Phone 936-634-9500.